useful nor was impressed by this conveyor. He just looked at his friend and said, "You have committed three acts of evil and treachery. Firstly, you have displeased my heart against a brother in faith. Secondly, you have unduly diverted my heart and made it occupied with something unpleasant. And thirdly, you have lowered yourself in my eyes and proved wicked by exposing others. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh."
Your mercy, your love is all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, oh, oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all I need. And I know that you see how much you need to me. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need to be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz. Every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Despite Biden's characterization of Obama's mass deportations as a mistake and pledge to usher in a more humane immigration system, United We Dream estimates that the administration has deported just over 300,000 people since January, largely using a Trump-era policy called Title 42. Says Jake Johnson, writer, in an article titled, "With 300,000 deported in first 100 days, rights group warns Biden well on track to repeat Obama failures." Stay tuned, please, for the details. rights group United Redeem has recently warned that unless he takes immediate steps to improve his administration's treatment of immigrants, President Joe Biden is at serious risk of repeating the destructive failures of former President Barack Obama, who deported roughly 3 million people during his 8 years in office. Despite Biden's characterization of Obama's mass deportations as a mistake and pledge to usher in a more humane immigration system, United We Dream estimates that the administration has deported just over 300,000 people since January, largely using a Trump-era policy called Title 42. The policy was first issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, last March at the start of the coronavirus pandemic and has been kept in place by the Biden administration. As Human Rights Watch, HRW, explained earlier this month, the Title 42 expulsion policy has effectively closed the U.S. border to nearly all asylum seekers based on the misapplication of an obscure 75-year-old public health law. That law, the Public Health Service Act of 1944, was designed to confer quarantine authority to health authorities that would apply to everyone, including U.S. citizens, arriving from a foreign country, HRW noted. Quarantine authority was never meant to be used to determine which non-citizens could or couldn't be expelled or removed from the U.S. In a statement recently, Cynthia Garcia of United We Dream stressed that Title 42 was designed under one of the most anti-immigrant administrations in modern history. President Biden and the Department of Homeland Security must be reminded that their inaction to protect vulnerable immigrant communities seeking refuge in the U.S. is not only putting lives in the line, it upholds the white nationalist immigration system that seeks to expel and keep black and brown immigrants out at any cost, said Garcia, who voiced dismay at the Biden administration's deportation of vulnerable Haitians and others. According to a report released late last month by the Haitian Bridge Alliance and other advocacy groups, the Biden administration used Title 42 to deport more people during its first weeks in power than the Trump administration did in all of fiscal year 2020. Reflecting on his time as vice president, President Biden acknowledged that the Obama administration was wrong in deporting over 2.5 million people and vowed to never make that mistake again when he took office, Garcia continued. President Biden is well on track to repeat history. Now he must make a choice. Repeat the mistakes of the Obama administration or do everything in his power to end the cruelty of detentions, expulsions, and deportations and show that he is a president of his word. National Partnership for New Americans, NPNA, a coalition of more than 40 immigrants and refugee rights organizations, echoed United We Dream's concerns about continued mass deportations during the first 100 days of the Biden administration. NPNA noted that there are many changes that the Biden administration can pursue with little to no congressional action, including ending the use of Title 42 expulsions, designating temporary protected status for Haiti and other countries that are set to expire, and increasing the number of refugees that the United States will resettle as part of the presidential determination. These are literally life or death decisions that will impact millions of lives, the group said. It continued, the administration can also take action to expand access to citizenship and justice and to bolster due process protections through an increase of legal representation for those in detention and removal proceedings.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything comes on you, the Lord Most High.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalam ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursaleen, Sayyidina Abul Qasim al Mustafa Muhammad. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. In front of us is the night of Qadr, the night of destiny. When we look at a tradition, it talks about that the master of all the other months, that the best month of Allah is the month of Ramadan. But inside this month, there is a special night which the traditions talk about being the heart of the month of Ramadan. قلب شهر رمضان ليلة القدر. The heart of the month of Ramadan is the month, the night of Qadr, the night of destiny. This is a night that our destinies will be determined. Who is going to go to Hajj, for example? Who is going to live? Who is going to die? Who is going to be married? This is one of the effects of such a night that, as the Holy Quran says, فِيهَا يُفْرَقُ كُلُّ أَمْرٍ حَكِيمٍ, and every distinct and precise matter will be made tonight. So it is a very special night. It is a night that we should do ihya. We should live in this night. Not only stay up until the morning, but we should be alive. What does it mean to be alive? It means to connect to God. Because our connection to God is our life, is human life. That is the difference between us and animals. Is that if for a human to be a true human, to be an insan kamil, a perfect human, his main distinguishing characteristic is that he is connected to God. So on such a night, we look at some of the traditions. And one of the traditions we have says that whoever is alive or lives the night of Qadr, his sins will be forgiven, even if they amount to the stars in the sky. How many stars do we have in the sky? If you go to a very clear area, say a desert, and you look up at the sky, you'll see thousands with your eyes, millions of stars. Or as heavy as the mountains, if you were able to put the mountains on a scale, how much would mountains weigh? Or if your sins are as voluminous as the ocean, how much volume does the oceans have? No matter how heavy our sins are, and no matter how much in volume they are, no matter how numerous they are, they will be forgiven tonight. So this is the night of Qadr, the night that we want to live in it with connecting to God, the night that we want to live in it with reciting du'as. One of the important things for us to do in such a night is to recite different du'as. Du'a Joshan Kabir, for example, Du'a Abu Hamza Thumali. These are important du'as that we have. But the most important thing for us to do is to take a special time away, maybe from others, and to think about your relationship with God. Because God, His display of power and seeing and witnessing Him will be very, very, very clear in the Day of Judgment. But in this world, He has signs for us. And all of creation, the trees, the mountains, the deserts, everything that He has made, these are all signs for us. So the more we ponder and think during the night of Qadr, the more we think about His creation, and we ask ourselves, who has created this? We come to God. As how we read in Dua Joshan Kabir, it says, Ya man fis sama'i adhumatu. Oh, He whose greatness is in the heavens, in the next world you'll see His greatness. Ya man fil ardi ayatu. But in this world, you see God's greatness by His signs. To think about the signs of God, to think about the ni'mats and blessings of God in such a night, to think that how He has brought us towards Islam, that He has given us Islam, a way of us connecting to God, a way of knowing Him, a way of following Him. That this is one of the greatest gifts that God has given us, and to appreciate it and to talk to Him and to do dua and pray that Allah keeps us in the path of guidance, inshallah, and brings us and maximizes our guidance, inshallah. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله ما لنا رب سوى
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله لا
In the limelight.
A panel of international human rights experts have called on the International Criminal Court in The Hague to investigate police violence against black Americans after releasing a 188-page report regarding the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, and countless others by law enforcement officers. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Julia Conley Ryder. This article is published under the heading International rights experts condemn U.S. police killings as crimes against humanity. Here's more. A panel of international human rights experts have called on the International Criminal Court in The Hague to investigate police violence against black Americans after releasing a 188-page report regarding the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, and countless others by law enforcement officers. The commission said the police killings of people of color in the U.S. constitute crimes against humanity, a finding it came to after hearing the testimonies of victims' families at virtual public hearings held earlier this year. We are in the midst of a humanitarian crisis. Emily Galvin Almanza, founder of Partners for Justice, tweeted after the report was released. The world is not only watching, it's judging, wrote historian Dr. Paula Lee. The decision to label police killings as crimes against humanity was not given lightly. Hina Jilani, one of the 12 commissioners and a pioneering Pakistani human rights lawyer, told The Guardian. We examined all the facts and concluded that there are situations in the U.S. that beg the urgent scrutiny of the ICC. To constitute crimes against humanity, a crime must be widespread of systematic and must be the result of policy, meaning a state or organization intends to carry out an attack against a civilian population, whether through action or deliberate failure to take action. Experts from 11 countries formed the Commission of Inquiry on Systematic Racist Police Violence last year after the families of several black Americans killed by officers petitioned the United Nations to investigate the country's epidemic of violence. Under pressure from the Trump administration, the UN Human Rights Council declined to focus its inquiry on the U.S., which led the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, National Conference of Black Lawyers, and National Lawyers Guild to conduct their own investigation. The commissioners heard the stories of dozens of victims, including Michael Brown, whose fatal shooting by Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri, led to a wave of racial justice demonstrations in 2014. 12-year-old Tamir Rice, who was killed after holding a toy gun in Cleveland Park that same year, and Freddie Gray, fatally injured while in Baltimore police custody in 2015. The testimonies led the commission to conclude that traffic stops by armed officers conducted under the pretext that drivers could be committing a crime are common precursors to excessive force and police killings. There exists in the U.S. a pattern of police violations of the Fourth Amendment rights of black people to be secure in their persons, houses, and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures. No-knock warrants, like the one used by Louisville police officers who shot Breonna Taylor in 2020, proliferate in cases of police violence against people of African descent. Lethal use of force against black Americans experiencing mental health crises, including Daniel Prude in Rochester, New York, and Sheris Francis in New York City, both in 2020, is routine and systematic, and an alarming pattern of manipulation of evidence, cover-ups, obstruction of justice, and collusion between various arms of law enforcement exists in the U.S., including in the case of Michael Brown, in which the officer was permitted to back his own gun and wash the victim's blood off his hands, thus destroying evidence. Giuliani told The Guardian that the panel found the testimonies to be extremely distressing. This country, which claims to be a global champion of human rights, itself fails to comply with international law, she told the outlet, adding that the family's stories made it clear that this was no longer an account of individual trauma. It was an account of trauma inflicted on a whole section of the United States population. In its report, the commission called on the U.S. government to support the BREATH Act, specifically those provisions aimed at divesting federal resources from incarceration and policing, and instead invest in new, non-punitive and non-carceral approaches to community safety utilizing funding incentives. Create an independent national federal law enforcement oversight commission with power to monitor and regulate the performance of all 18,000 police departments in the U.S. Implementing a zero-tolerance policy for instances of police brutality and use of excessive and deadly force. And remove qualified immunity, which protects police officers from civil lawsuits, and prohibit no-knock warrants and chokeholds, among other recommendations. The Commission expressed hope that an investigation by the ICC would force the U.S. regime to support much-needed change, The Guardian reported. We felt that the U.S. would benefit war. Individual police officers further deterred from resorting to unjustified forces, knowing that some kind of international criminal responsibility might be held against them, Gilani told the outlet.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us here today. As you know, we are in the month of Ramadan, which is one of the most blessed months of the Islamic calendar. It's the month in which the Quran was revealed. It's the month in which we fast. And this is the month in which our prayers are accepted more quickly than in other months. And the doors to God's forgiveness are opened, and God forgives people quicker than he does at other times. A lot of people ask, what exactly should we do in the month of Ramadan besides fasting? Fasting is something that fasting is a series of things that we refrain from. But what can we do in the month of Ramadan positively and actively perform to increase our chances of acquiring God's forgiveness? This is something which has been mentioned. The answer to this question is something which has been mentioned in the traditions of the family of the Prophet. One of the things which has been mentioned in the traditions, which is very good, is to read the Quran in the month of Ramadan. Imam Raza alayhi salam has been reported to have said the following, that if somebody reads one verse from the Book of God in the month of Ramadan, it's like he has finished the Quran in one of the other months of the year. This shows us the virtue of the month of Ramadan. And even if we read one verse in this month, it's almost as if we've read the Holy Quran in another month. Another good act that we can perform in this month is actually something that we can do in the days upcoming to Ramadan and the preceding Ramadan. And that's this, that if somebody is able to... We know that fasting in the month of Sha'ban and Rajab are also very recommended. If somebody cannot do this, if somebody can't do that, then what should he do? Imam Sadiq is reported to have said the following. If somebody is able to keep the last three fasts from the month of Sha'ban and connect his fasting to the month of Ramadan, that God Almighty will give him the sawab and the reward of somebody who fasted for two consecutive months. Two consecutive months. And so if somebody has this problem and he can't fast like for all 3 months, and he can do this, he acquires the same reward of somebody who fasted all of the 2 months. And this is something which is also echoed in another tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, who said that if somebody performs one good deed, he's given 10 times the reward of it. Similarly, if somebody fasts for 3 days, it's almost as if he's fasted for the entire month. This is why we say that the month of Ramadan is very important, and it's for this reason that the Prophet said that Ramadan is the spring of the believer. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the virtues of Ramadan, as well as the good acts that we can perform in the days coming up to Ramadan and in the month of Ramadan. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Crematoriums in New Delhi, India are being inundated with so many bodies that they have been forced to build makeshift funeral pyres on spare patches of land, as the COVID crisis sweeping India led to an explosion of new cases. Crematoriums across the capital, New Delhi, are struggling to cope, with grieving relatives forced to wait up to 20 hours for a funeral pyre for their loved ones. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at The Guardian, with Agence France-Presse also contributing. The piece is titled India's COVID Crisis, Delhi Crematoriums Forced to Build Makeshift Pyres. Stay with us for more of the article by The Guardian. Crematoriums in New Delhi are being inundated with so many bodies that they have been forced to build makeshift funeral pyres on spare patches of land, as the COVID crisis sweeping India led to an explosion of new cases. Crematoriums across India's capital are struggling to cope, with grieving relatives forced to wait up to 20 hours for a funeral pyre for their loved ones. In New Delhi, photographs taken on Tuesday, 27th of April, showed smoke billowing from dozens of pyres lit in a car park that had been turned into a makeshift crematorium. Elsewhere, workers built makeshift pyres on land outside crematoriums. "People are just dying, dying, dying," said Jitendra Singh Shanti, who is coordinating more than 100 cremations per day at the site in the east of the city. "If we get more bodies, then we will cremate on the road. There is no more space here," he said, adding, "We had never thought that we would see such horrible scenes." Trees in parks were being cut down to use in funeral pyres, as relatives of the dead were being asked to help pile up wood. 27 new pyres have been built in the capital's Sarai Kale Khan crematorium, and dozens more were being added in a nearby park. Officials were also looking for additional space near the city's Yamuna riverbed. The Hindustan Times said families were waiting up to 20 hours to cremate their loved ones, as crematoriums were full. India Today said that crematoriums were expanding to manage the surging death tolls. India recorded yet another day of over 300,000 new cases on Tuesday, 27th of April, and 2,771 new deaths. However, health experts believe the official toll is far higher, with populous states such as Uttar Pradesh and Gujarat accused of undercounting COVID-19 fatalities and cases. As the death toll mounts, the night skies in some Indian cities glow from the funeral pyres. Crates of ventilators and other oxygen devices from Britain were unloaded at a New Delhi airport on Tuesday, among the first emergency medical supplies to arrive in the country, where infection and death rates are growing exponentially. The explosion in infections in India, 350,000 new cases were recorded there on Tuesday alone, has driven a surge in global cases to 147.7 million. The coronavirus has now killed more than 3.1 million people worldwide. The World Health Organization, WHO, said on Tuesday that a variant of the COVID-19 feared to be contributing to the surge in coronavirus cases in India has been found in over a dozen countries. The United Nations Health Agency, WHO, said the B.1.617 variant of COVID-19, first found in India, had, as of Tuesday, been detected in over 1,200 sequences uploaded to the GISAID open access database from at least 17 countries. Most sequences were uploaded from India, the United Kingdom, the United States, and Singapore, the World Health Organization said in its weekly epidemiological update on the coronavirus pandemic. Many countries are now shutting their borders to travellers from India. Belgium became the latest, also banning travel from Brazil and South Africa, similarly hit by fast-spreading coronavirus variants. Spain said it will impose a 10-day quarantine on all travellers arriving from India beginning on Wednesday, 28th of April. Australia has also cut all passenger air travel with India, suspending flights until at least 15th of May, leaving a host of high-profile cricketers stuck in India after playing in the lucrative Indian Premier League. In Fiji, an outbreak of the Indian variant of the coronavirus has forced the capital into lockdown after the island nation had avoided infections for a year, with health officials saying they now fear a tsunami of cases.
يا ليلة القدر يا فضل بارنا خير من الدهر بالعفو تاتنا
يا ليلة القدر يا فضل بارنا.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program.
¶¶
Today's lesson, the night of power, Laylatul Qadr. The most important thing of this month is the night of power, Laylatul Qadr. The night which is superior than 1,000 months. 1,000 months jihad, 1,000 months rain, and the worship in it is superior than 1,000 months of worship, as has been narrated in the traditions. Yes, the night of power is a very precious and distinguished night. In accordance with the Quranic interpretation, it is a very auspicious night. And as could be derived from the traditions in this night, the sustenance and age of servants and the good and evil of their affairs are destined. The Holy Quran was descended in this night. Also, the angels are descended all over the earth. And when they pass through the gatherings of believers, send salutations and praises upon them and consider their prayers until the dawn. This is a very special night, brothers and sisters. We sometimes feel and think that it is another ordinary night. No, this is where Allah opens up and He promises to open up the doors of His mercy, those doors that He does not open up the rest of the year. Some of those doors are open a year long, but these special doors that He opens up on this night are particular and specific. So let's, inshallah, be prepared to benefit as much as we can from the night, the Laylatul Qadr.
Ramadanul Mustabin Jaa bin Nuril Mubin Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-Qanitin.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the night of power, Laylatul Qadr. It has been narrated that during this night, the prayers of all are accepted, and the prayer of no one remains unanswered except the following. Number one, the one who has displeased and angered his parents and was declared disinherited or rebellious by them. Number two, the one who has cut off his relationship with his kith and kin. Number three, the one who possesses animosity and vengeance of a believer in his heart. Number four, the one who consumes alcoholic drinks. Brothers and sisters, we know all the believers out there are inshallah free of all these vices. But in case you have slipped, in case you have made a mistake, now is the time to rectify. Now is the time to make sure that you reverse this action of yours before you get into the prayers of Laylatul Qadr, the night of power, the night of Qadr. You want your du'as to be accepted, you have to reverse these ill doings. Inshallah, we all have to introspect, think, evaluate, and analyze where we stand and any discrepancy, any deficiency that we have that would stop our prayers to reaching Allah. We need to reverse the effect of that. After the recital of invocations and supplications, one should also allocate some time for self-meditation and pondering. Of course, this should be done at a time when he is free from whatever disturbs his thoughts, like domination of sleep, overeating, and pain of hunger. These are the advices of some of our senior scholars and urafa. Let's follow it.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio,
Thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
But you know that Tara will be better, Tara will be stronger.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
While the technologies required enabling high levels of automation are advancing rapidly, producing a vehicle that can complete a journey safely and legally without human input remains a big challenge. Three key barriers must be overcome before they can be safely introduced to the market. That is technology, regulations, and public acceptance. We're prepared for you an article written by Hussein Dia, a professor of future urban mobility at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne, Australia. The piece is titled, Why Self-Driving Cars Are Still a Long Way Off. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. Please stay with us for more of Hussein Dia's article. The recent crash of a Tesla self-driving car in the United States, in which two people died, has reignited debate about the capabilities and safety of today's self-driving technologies. Tesla cars include an autopilot feature that monitors surrounding traffic and lane markings, and the company is currently rolling out a more advanced full self-driving system that promises automatic navigation, stopping at traffic lights, and more. Investigators say it appears nobody was in the driver's seat of the vehicle when it crashed. The Tesla chief executive, Elon Musk, has said no self-driving features were in use at the time. Nonetheless, the tragic incident has raised questions over self-driving technology. How safe is it? And how much attention does it require from drivers? Experts talk about six levels of autonomous vehicle technology, ranging from level zero, a traditional vehicle with no automation, to level 5, a vehicle that can independently do anything a human driver can. Most automated driving solutions available on the market today require human intervention. This puts them at level 1, driver assistance, such as keeping a car in a lane or managing its speed, or level 2, partial automation, such as steering and speed control. These capabilities are intended for use with a fully attentive driver prepared to take control of the vehicle at any moment. Level 3 vehicles have more autonomy and can make some decisions on their own, but the driver must still remain alert and take control of the system if the system is unable to drive the vehicle. In the past few years, several fatal crashes involving level 2 and level 3 vehicles have occurred. These crashes were largely attributed to human error, and to mistaking these levels of automation for full self-driving capabilities. Vehicle manufacturers and regulators have been criticized for not doing enough to make these systems more resilient to misuse by inattentive drivers. For higher levels of automation, a human driver won't necessarily be involved in the driving task. The driver would in effect be replaced by artificial intelligence self-driving software. Level 4 is a self-driving vehicle that has a bounded scope of where and when it will drive. The best example of a Level 4 vehicle is Google's Waymo robo-taxi project. Other companies are also making significant progress in developing Level 4 vehicles, but these machines are not commercially available to the public as yet. Level 5 represents a truly autonomous vehicle that can go anywhere at any time, similar to what a human driver can do. However, the transition from Level 4 to Level 5 is orders of magnitude harder than transitions between other levels and may take years to achieve. While the technologies required to enable higher levels of automation are advancing rapidly, producing a vehicle that can complete a journey safely and legally without human input still remains a big challenge. Three key barriers must be overcome before they can be safely introduced to the market. These are technology, regulations, and public acceptance. The self-driving software is a key differentiating feature of highly automated vehicles. The software is based on machine learning algorithms and deep learning neural networks that include millions of virtual neurons that mimic the human brain. The neural networks do not include any explicit "if X happens, then do Y" programming. Rather, they're trained to recognize and classify objects using examples of millions of videos and images from real-world driving conditions. The more diverse and representative the data, the better they get at recognizing and responding to different situations. Training neural networks is something like holding a child's hand when crossing the road, and teaching her to learn through constant experience, replication, and patience. While these algorithms can detect and classify objects very accurately, they still can't mimic the intricate complexities of driving. Autonomous vehicles not only need to detect and recognize humans and other objects, but must also interact with, understand, and react to how these things behave. They also need to know what to do in unfamiliar situations. Without a large set of examples for all possible driving scenarios, the task of managing the unexpected will be relatively resistant to deep learning and training. Policymakers and regulators around the world are struggling to keep pace. Currently, the industry remains mostly self-regulating, particularly in determining whether the technology is safe enough for open roads. Regulators have largely failed to provide criteria for making such determinations. While it is necessary to test the performance of self-driving software under real-world conditions, this should only happen after comprehensive safety testing and evaluation. Regulators should come up with a set of standard tests and make companies benchmark their algorithms on standard data sets before their vehicles are allowed on open roads. A graduated approach to certification is needed, in which a self-driving system could first be evaluated in simulations, then in controlled real-world environments. Once the vehicles pass specific benchmark tests, the regulators can allow them on open roads. The public must be involved in decisions regarding self-driving vehicle deployment and adoption as well. There is a real risk of undermining public trust if self-driving technologies are not regulated to ensure public safety. A lack of trust will affect not only those who want to use the technology, but also those who share the road with them. Finally, This incident should serve as a catalyst to bring regulators and industry to establish a strong and robust safety culture to guide innovations in self-driving technologies. Without this, autonomous vehicles would go nowhere fast.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Forty recommendations by Imam Khamenei for the journey towards God. Ask again and again. One of the required conditions for acceptance of dua is that we express them with attention. Sometimes, people might repeatedly say, with no real attention to the meaning, phrases like, O God, forgive us, O God, expand our share from your blessings, and O God, help us pay our debts. A person might say du'as like that for 10 years, but their du'as won't be accepted. You should supplicate to God and implore. You should beseech to God earnestly. Ask again and again. In this manner, God the Exalted will surely accept the du'as and realize them. Teach us too. My advice is to practice self-observation during these 3 days spent in mosques. When you speak, when you eat, socialize, read, think, or plan for the future, always prefer God's satisfaction and will over your yearnings and desires. Do not surrender to your desires. Practicing these observances during the 3 days of itikaf can be a lesson for those dear ones performing it and for us sitting here, watching our dear young ones in itikaf. Teach us with your actions.
فيك الحب زاد عم العباد يا خير زاد رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان ليتك دوما قريب
True awaiting. The most important responsibility of the individuals who await the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is to improve spiritual, ethical and practical aspects and to establish religious and effective bonds with the believers and also get prepared for confronting the coercive people. Those who during the sacred defense era participated in the sacred defense enthusiastically were the ones who truly awaited Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. May God hasten his return. The person who is ready to defend the values, the Islamic homeland, and the rising flag of Islam, when the country is threatened by the enemies, can claim that when Imam Mahdi alayhi salam comes, he would follow his steps in dangerous fields. But those who are weak in face of dangers, deviations, ups and downs of the world, those who won't do anything that would put their own interests at risk, can never be regarded as truly awaiting Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Person who awaits that great Redeemer should prepare in themselves and the basis of redemption and act in a manner so they can resist and redemption is realized.